Hi, my name is Paul Kearney. I'm Professor of Politics and Public Policy. This is a series of short podcasts to accompany my series of blog posts, which introduce key public policy concepts and theories in 1,000 words. This one is on policy change and measurement, and you should probably listen to this after the What is Policy podcast. Now, in my opinion, there are 3 simple elements to a good piece of policy theory-driven research. 3 questions. What is policy? How much has it changed, and what explains the change? In fact, when I teach these issues, particularly at a postgraduate level, I get my students to try and answer this question or a series of questions in their coursework. And what they soon find is that these questions are simple, but the answer is remarkably complicated in each case. Now, the major downside is that although we have a host of theories and concepts to help us explain policy change, the whole enterprise presupposes incorrectly that we know what policy is and have a good way to tell how much it changed. Now, instead, a good study will address this problem of meaning and measurement with a simple solution: show your work. So in other words, you acknowledge the problem about it's tricky to identify what policy is. You describe your working definition of policy in a particular field, health policy, tobacco policy. Then you describe in some detail 2 things. The first is your approach to how you'll measure policy and policy change or continuity. And the second is you'll decide which aspect of measurement on which you would like to focus. Now, in some cases, scholars will focus on categories of policy. So look out for a couple of examples. Lowy's famous distinction initially was between regulatory, redistributive, and distributive policies to get us to think about how policymakers weigh up the difficulties of using different means to get what they want. So for example, it's often more difficult to achieve what you want through redistributing resources than it is to introduce regulation. Another example is by Hood and Margetts, who talk about policy tools, and he described 4 main tools. The first is nodality, which involves a government being at the centre of information networks that underpins policy development. Authority, which refers to the power of policymakers provided by a constitution or a country's laws. Treasure, which is the money or resources available to support policy decisions. And organisation, the resources such as staff, buildings, technology at their disposal. Or we might make things a little bit more simple, at least at the beginning, by trying to define and measure policy in a particular field by focusing on one of 2 things. The first is a specific policy instrument. And in that case, we'll try and explain key developments in detail. So, one of my favourite examples is a smoking ban in public places in the UK. I try to explain in depth why that came about. Or the second thing you could do is try and provide an account of all relevant policy instruments to give you an overall sense of policy continuity and change, as well as a sense of policy trajectory. So in that case, a key question for me was this smoking ban the logical progression of decades worth of policies towards tobacco control? Now, if you go down that route, the list of possible policy instruments is very long, and you'll see that from the post that accompanies this podcast. And it includes the use of funding. Governments raise tax, then spend it on particular areas. They introduce economic penalties, such as taxes, to dissuade behaviour, incentives to encourage behaviour. They introduce regulations, which can be statutory regulations backed up by legislation. Or they can be informal agreements between the government and particular groups. Governments can make policy by distributing benefits and providing public services to particular groups. They can provide public information or education on an issue. They can fund bodies to do research or campaign on their behalf, and so on. Now, the benefit to that long list is that you can provide a relatively rich and relatively comprehensive account of what's going on. And particularly, you would often see a downside to an account which simply talks about legislation, when what you want to know if a government makes a policy is if they provide enough resources, such as money and staffing, political will and such like, to back up that legislation. So you need that combination of instruments or decisions to get a full account of what's going on. But the downside is a practical one. It's very difficult to know where to stop and how to stop. And in fact, in more general terms, we face some major problems when we try to measure policy change or continuity with reference to a combination of instruments. So the first one I talked about was this trade-off between depth and breadth. The benefit of choosing one instrument is that you can go into great detail about what it is and how it came about. That compares with a focus on breadth, in which you have to make some tough choices about the simplicity in which you'll describe some things and the level of effort you'll give to each instrument. So that's just a judgment call. I mean, you can see very good studies which use one or the other of those approaches. In fact, when I've been doing research, I've chosen both at different times. The second major issue is this question: can you separate your empirical work from your normative expectations? So, for example, often people or commentators will talk about policy being relatively slow or insufficient compared to the size of the problem. So again, in my field of tobacco, you often find people saying, well, given that tobacco was this major cause of ill health and death, policy change has been incredibly slow over the years. Now that would compare with people who have put more of a focus on civil liberties and the right to choose, and would say, well, this level of infringement on our behaviour is too far and too fast. So it's difficult to separate your normative expectations from your empirical evaluations. Now it's interesting to see how people deal with that when they do empirical work. Some people just, if you look at some public health studies, some people simply say, this is a major cause of death, and here's what we expect to be proportionate. Other people like Crenson, which I'll talk about again in the podcast on power. Crenson tries to make a comparative evaluation of policy. He says, look at this area. It was Gary, Indiana, in which US Steel was, almost the sole employer. He said, look at environmental regulations in Gary, Indiana, compared to a comparable region in which they don't have a company like that. And his point was, you can provide an expectation for how much policy change you expect by comparing one area with another in the absence of this explanation for a lack of policy change or a lack of increased regulation. So I would recommend that the Unpolitics of Air Pollution to look into that kind of issue. The next dilemma or question we ask is, how does policy change seem when you look from different perspectives? So, from the notional top, so how effective or substantive does policy change look from central government compared to a particular organisation? So you see lots of different studies, central government top-down studies compared with single organisational studies, and they'll give you very different ideas about how much policy change there is, depending on where you focus. The next question you might ask is, can we work out why a measure was used, and does it matter? Now, again, with tobacco, I think a key example is governments like the UK really raised tobacco taxation from the 1980s. Now, the question there is, did they do it to dissuade people from smoking, or did they do it to raise taxation? Now, it might be that different people use these instruments in different ways. And it does give you, if you can work out the motivation for these policies, it can give you an idea of the significance of policy, particularly over the long term. How likely is our policymakers going to stick to these policies if they're committed to, an ideal or a particular policy philosophy or simply expedience at the time? The next question is more methodological. Which statistical measures do we use when we're trying to work out policy? Now, governments and oppositions or political actors face the same problem. You can present policy continuity and change in different ways according to the measures you use. The classic ones are when governments talk about how much money, how much extra resource they've spent on a particular policy area. Now, if they can get away with it, they'll talk about a rise in cash terms, because that seems the most impressive. A 10% rise in cash terms looks good. That compares with, two examples in which you would qualify that rise. One is a real rise in terms of inflation. So it might be that a 10% rise is far smaller if you take into account that everything costs more. The more complicated measure of an increase in prices is the GDP, excuse me, the GDP deflator, which measures, economic activity. So these measures really make a difference to how you evaluate policy change. And finally, a question that sometimes comes up is, what if policy seems contradictory? Now, we'll come across this idea when we talk about, large complex government in which different organisations and government make policy in the same area, and you have to decide what it all adds up to. So again, if we stick to tobacco, my favourite example is lots of governments, say the US and the EU, increasingly control tobacco, but at the same time they subsidise the growing of tobacco leaf, and particularly with the US, they encourage free trade, which includes the increased selling of tobacco products from countries like the US to other countries. So these things look contradictory, and I think you have to look out for how you would evaluate policy as a whole if you only focused on one instrument or if you tried to give a complete account. Now, my preferred, not perfect solution to these problems is to be open about them and to explore, if possible, the different ways in which we might characterize policy change. And that sort of provision of different accounts or narratives helps underpin competing explanations for change. So it might be that one particular theory of change works best with one particular account of change. And it's at the very least interesting to compare the value of particular theories according to different ways in which you might evaluate policy change. Now, I talk about that solution more in the post to do with the title of one of my articles, which is Standing on the Shoulders of Giants, which is about combining the insights of theories. I mean, for now, I would simply note, if you were doing some work on measuring policy change and finding it difficult, perhaps you're a student, perhaps you're not alone there. In fact, why not go and have a look at a few decent published articles in some good journals and see how the authors address this problem of policy measurement? I think you'd be surprised at how few of them actually provide a convincing open account about the level of change in the area they're talking about. Okay, thank you.